We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on WILL AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn. We are in the final hours of the 96th Illinois General Assembly. The last scheduled day for the 96th is Tuesday. The final days and hours have been wild and full of drama as the House and Senate have contemplated and acted on some very big issues. And in a short while, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn and the other constitutional officers will take their oaths of office and deliver inaugural addresses. This morning, ahead of the inauguration and ahead of the 97th session of the legislature being gaveled to order, we'll look at the final days of the 96th General Assembly and ask what lies ahead. Our guest is political scientist Kent Redfield of the University of Illinois at Springfield and the U of I's Institute of Government and Public Affairs. He's written widely on Illinois government, including two books on the role money plays in state politics, Cash Clout and Money Counts. Kent Redfield will be with us until 11:30 this morning when we will join Illinois Public Radio for live coverage of the inaugural. Until then, listeners, I invite your phone calls and email messages for Kent Redfield. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL, and our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Kent Redfield, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
Good morning. Just fine.
Well, there are so many things out there in Springfield, under the dome, so many proposals. Have you ever seen anything like this in the final days of a session?
It's pretty unusual or probably unprecedented. I mean, we're up against the deadline to get things done in the old session. We could actually do some business Wednesday morning before the new legislature is sworn in at noon. And we certainly have had busy kind of fall veto legislative sessions in the past. But, you know, we have this horrendous fiscal crisis, and there's this last-ditch effort to try to cobble together some kind of an agreement. Primarily, the Democrats are pushing this with the belief that it will be more difficult to get an agreement to their liking once the new legislature comes into session, even though we'll still have a Democratic governor and a Democratic legislature. So there are as many balls in the air as I've ever seen in one of these fall sessions.
What do you think the prospects are for a vote on a tax hike before noon Wednesday?
I think we will have a vote. I don't know whether it will pass. This is very fluid. There's a proposal out there now. Whether or not that's going to be the final proposal or whether or not there are the votes for it, excuse me, we really don't know.
Yeah, well, there's been some speculation that this proposal will be trimmed back. Do you think that that's a real possibility?
There are pressures to have spending for education, increased spending, and pressure for property tax relief, aside from the question of, hey, how do we pay our bills and how do we get on the path to a balanced budget. And so you really do have cross pressures. If we keep the cigarette tax increase, then that money supposedly will go to education. If you eliminate the property tax relief, you can lower the amount of the income tax increase, but there are lots of people who are at this point saying, you know, without some property tax relief, I'm not going to vote for an income tax increase. So, there are certainly efforts to scale it back on the corporate side, on the overall amount, and whether it's what part of it is permanent, what part of it is temporary. But it is, it is very difficult to put something together that is going to get the 60 votes in the House, and then even though the Senate has already passed an increase last spring, there still are questions about whether whatever emerges from the House is, going to satisfy 30 members of the Senate. So I think it's very problematic at this point.
We have a couple of listeners now waiting for us, so let's go and talk with them. Our first caller this morning on line one in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. I've been a lifelong opponent here of the death penalty in the state of Illinois. And I know last week the Illinois House voted to abolish the death penalty, pretty good vote. And I'm wondering, since you're there in Springfield and the matter has now gone to the Senate, what you think the votes are there either for or against the abolition of the death penalty. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Senator Colaturn, the Senate president, is in favor of that bill passing. He expressed some optimism that it would pass. It will get a roll call before, before the old General Assembly goes out of existence Wednesday morning. But, he clearly indicated this was up to individual members in terms of voting their conscience. This is not something that the leadership on either side is going to make a partisan issue. I think from what I hear, the votes are there, but again, this is one of those, it was razor thin in the House. They took a second vote, it passed by one vote. So I suspect that there's certainly going to be a roll call. I think at this point, the odds are in favor of it passing, but it is, again, one of those fluid situations, and all it takes is one person to, get upset about something else, and you could knock the whole thing off the rails.
And where does the governor stand on the issue?
No one knows for sure. That's a fairly common refrain, regardless of, common answer, regardless of what your question is. The assumption is that he would sign it, but that is not something that was part of the campaign. It is with governors like legislators, a very personal decision. So if it passes the General Assembly, I believe the governor will sign it. But this is a very, and he does not need to sign it right away. I mean, there are times, the legislation is out there, but I suspect he would sign it.
Mm. Let's talk with another listener. This is someone in Champaign County. Line two, hello.
Hi. Thanks. Well, on that issue, I noticed the News Gazette almost editorializes guardedly in favor of it in a way. It's the last two sentences are mutually contradictory, but it ends on the one that says, at least we would not have to worry about executing an innocent person. So I was pretty surprised to see that, actually. I wanted to call about the tax increase, of course, and I understand from the Illinois radio service that you're frequently a guest on, but weren't on last week, that it doesn't include the tax credit provisions to actually make sure that the working poor don't see a tax increase. I assume that can be pushed in pretty quickly since it was part of the Quinn plan early on. If there's anybody paying attention to that particular aspect of the whole thing, the circumstance does get slighted, it seems, because at the federal level, it's not been commented much on that the working poor actually pay more taxes than they did last year because of the way the making work pay tax credit goes away and is only replaced by a 2% FICA reduction, which doesn't actually make up for it. So, but what is there any talk of protecting the working poor in Illinois here?
At the moment, what is on the table is pretty simple in terms of just being that, extension, temporary extension of the rates. Every time you try to make it more progressive, you reduce the amount of revenue. And there is, I would not for a minute defend the tax structure that exists in Illinois. It's very regressive, both in terms of the sales tax and particularly the income tax. But it is, there is. What is the overwhelming need at the moment is to pay off the bills and to get closer to balance. And we're probably going to address that. My preference would have been to address the overall tax structure to make it more progressive and to look at spending. I mean, we have this proposal has prohibitions on new programs, caps on increases, but I think to assume that either the revenue system is perfect and we should just spend what it generates, or to assume that everything the state is currently doing we ought to keep doing are both erroneous assumptions, and we really need to deal with both sides. Unfortunately, we're not going to do that. I think if something passes before Wednesday, it basically is going to try to raise enough new revenue and borrow enough money to get us to a point 4 years from now when we're going to have to make these decisions all over again.
Does a listener want to follow up?
Sure, thank you. Well, if we're going to get into recriminations in advance, I guess I would blame Speaker of the House Madigan for saying he wouldn't go forward with anything without any Republican votes, basically giving them a veto, which I don't think is the real reason. I think he didn't want to go ahead with this. But it seems to me, I've heard a Republican representative saying that making the system more progressive is actually unconstitutional, which is really bizarre. He said he was going to hire a lawyer to go after it if they did anything to do that. So it's a terrible discourse, the fact that they can leave it to the last minute. I hope they don't party too hardy, and I hope they actually get something done and actually do pass some kind of tax increase and do as well as they can under the limitations to make it a little bit progressive. Thanks.
Thanks for the call this morning. Kent Redfield, any further thoughts?
I don't think anyone would defend the way the state has been run for the last decade, and we made some very bad budget decisions in the last 2 years of the Ryan administration. So it is, and our dealings with pensions go back, our misdealings with pensions go back go even further than that. So it's a horrendous hole. We really need a comprehensive solution. The talk of tax relief, essentially this plan writes checks to people who pay property taxes. It doesn't require any kind of, shifting of tax burden for education from property to income. It doesn't require local taxing bodies to do anything. It just says if you pay property taxes, the state of Illinois will write you a check instead of giving you a credit on your income tax. So it's kind of property tax relief, but it's not the comprehensive look at how much of the services should be paid out of property taxes, how much out of state taxes, how should we structure local government to provide those services. I mean, it begs all of those questions. It's just essentially sending everybody a check that pays property taxes.
And renters would perhaps or likely be left out of that.
No, yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't address any of the questions of equity and fairness and efficiency within the property tax system or disparate outcomes when you have education systems reliant on property taxes so that students in districts with high tax bases have a better opportunities than students in districts with low property tax bases.
And also the other thing to mention for people who might not be you know, thinking about this very often. But when it comes to our attention in the waning days of a legislative session, is that the state has a flat income tax.
Yes.
So if you go from 3 to 5.25, the burden falls more heavily on people with, you know, they're going to be paying a larger proportion of their income to the state.
Yes, to get a progressive income tax, that would require a constitutional amendment. That's part of the Constitution, the revenue article. You can get some progressivity by providing bigger exemptions for, personal exemptions. You can do some things with modeled after the earned income tax credit. I don't think that's unconstitutional. I think those things, certainly don't violate the basic idea of a flat tax, or flat tax rate. But it's no substitute for, really redesigning the whole process.
Yeah. Someone I spoke with over the weekend was pretty hopping mad about all of this, and he said, as far as he was concerned, the leadership of the state were a bunch of cowards, and that was the word he used, cowards. Can you give us some insight into how a plan like this comes to the table and comes to the table so late in the day?
Well, because these are hard decisions, and legislatures are not designed to make hard decisions because they're collective bodies, and leaders are worried about maintaining majorities. And we've had this tremendous vacuum in leadership. We had a terrible governor who was totally irresponsible, Rod Blagojevich. Then we had an unelected governor. And in the end of the Ryan administration, the last 2 years of the Ryan administration, you had a discredited governor who couldn't provide leadership. And I would contrast this to the situation we were in with the 1990 election, where Governor Edgar campaigned on saying he would keep an open mind about making the income tax, temporary income tax increase permanent, came in and really made hard, difficult decisions on the budget, and then provided the leadership to make the tax temporary tax permanent. But, that was after doing all of the things that, people didn't like it. There were lots of people who were opposed for it. But, the governor was there providing the context and the leadership. And this has been a situation where we really have been at drift for a decade. And we're also falling off cliff. I mean, there's no question that, we're paying last year's bills out of this year's money. Our bond ratings are very tenuous. And so, we have to do something. We're going to have to raise some revenue, eliminate half of state government or half of state government spending. We don't have a lot of options at this point. And it's been a real, I wouldn't disagree that, we haven't made the hard decisions.
Yeah. The governor's budget address is typically made in March. Given the uncertainties and the looming deadline, how does the administration's budget people prepare to generate that document?
Well, whether what happens in the next 2.5 days will determine whether we really have a doomsday budget or whether we have a very austere budget with some kind of a combination of spending and paying of bills that will get us, to a point again 4 years from now when we would have to make all of these decisions again. So there are not a lot of good options. And again, the governor has had a hard time. He became governor not under the normal circumstances, so he's not able to hire staff to have a transition, to do the things, you know, lots of people were reluctant to go to work for him when he became governor because they didn't know whether he was going to be governor in 18 months or 2 years. And so, you know, we really have had this tremendous vacuum. And a normal governor, you know, you get elected, you staff up, you try to, you know, take a hold of things. And, you know, this has not been a normal set of circumstances. So it's going to be very, you know, it's going to be either terribly unpleasant to put the budget together or impossible, depending on what the legislature does in the next, you know, 2.5 days.
Yeah. We have about 2 minutes left now, and we talked about the death penalty. We've talked about the tax proposal. There are a number of other big proposals out there. State workers' bargaining rights, workers' comp, a bill that would make changes to the budget process. You want to take any one of those and give us your take?
Yeah, we're trying to do some things to build some Republican support for the budget measures. And so the Medicare management bill that passed was part of that. Workers' comp, something will probably pass. I don't think we're going to do much more. There are, you know, part of it is to try to say, you know, look at these things that we've done, you know, that to try to give people some confidence in the decision to increase revenue. It seems too little too late. So we're certainly, you know, we did do two-tiered pensions. You know, there have been some hard decisions, just not enough.
Mm. Thoughts on the expansion of gambling?
I think it's probably going to collapse of its own weight. That generally is the case. You know, it is revenue, and we're desperate for revenue. But it's, I don't think there's enough time to do it. It will resurface in the spring if we don't raise do a tax increase now, because we will be even more desperate for money. And the gambling attractions gambling becomes just a revenue issue in a crisis. You don't think about social costs and all of the downsides of gambling. So even if it doesn't pass now, we may see it again in the spring.
Overall, how would you judge the accomplishments to date of the 96th Illinois General Assembly?
It's a big incomplete. You know, there have been some decisions that have been good. We've done some things on ethics. We really have not engaged the budget and spending, and we may take a step towards that, or we may punt it to the next General Assembly. At some point, you know, we're going to have to make these decisions.
Okay. There we will leave it. We're out of time. Kent Redfield, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Certainly.
Kent Redfield is a political scientist at the University of Illinois at Springfield and the U of I's Institute of Government and Public Affairs. My name is Celeste Quinn. Coming up next from Illinois Public Radio, live coverage of the inauguration of Illinois Governor Pat Quinn and the state's other constitutional officers. They will take their oaths of office and deliver inaugural addresses, and we'll have that coverage live from Illinois Public Radio. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana, online at will.illinois.edu. It's 12:30. I'm Celeste Quinn, our technical director, Jason Croft.